If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good day to you one and all. It is I, Justin Hawkins, and welcome to Justin Hawkins Rides Again, the podcast. Every week, I'll be discussing a theme regarding the pitfalls of the music industry with my producer, Jenny Mae Finn. This week, we try to figure out why the music industry really is a shit business. What is it about being part of this so-called glamorous industry that also makes it so horribly unbearable? I draw upon my own experiences from being attacked by the press to how being a creative can destroy your relationships. This is a good episode. Next week, I'll be interviewing Pat Finity, the incredible musician and beloved YouTube music commentary sensation. But in the meantime, please do enjoy today's podcast. Good day to you one and all. It is I, Justin Hawkins, and this is Justin Hawkins Rides Again featuring... Oh no, sorry, this is Justin Hawkins Rides Again. The Jaws of Victory, Pitfalls of the Music Trade. It's a shit business. Oh no, wait. It's a business. That's today's episode. Oh, this is Jenny Mae Finn.
Hello.
Justin Hawkins Rides Again. Again. Right, today, oh yeah, but if this is hi. This is Justin Hawkins Rides Again, the Jaws of Victory, Pitfalls of the Music Trade. And today's episode has another subheading, which is...
It's a shit business.
It's a shitty business. That's what they say, isn't it?
That's what you say.
No, I only say it because I'm doing Les McQueen from the League of Gentlemen, who famously said, it's a shit business.
But I guess it's very much the pitfalls episode, isn't it?
They're all pitfalls episodes, aren't they?
But this one's like the young glamorous side of the glamour.
Yeah. All right then, where should we start?
What's the worst thing?
The worst thing about the music trade.
What? Yeah.
About being a musician?
Like when you came up with this idea, you're like, oh, the bits that people realise aren't so glamorous.
Oh yeah, but then we realised that if you moan about things, then there's the... What was it? What was the example we used? It was...
Greta Van Fleet.
Greta Van Fleet, yeah. We did an episode on Greta Van Fleet ages ago now. And it was talking about... Well, we showed a little bit of interview footage, and one of them was complaining because they just did a show and then they had to travel for a long time to get to another town in America, which was New York Town, I think it was, wasn't it?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, they had to go to New York, and New York being like a media hub, they were obliged to do 8 hours of promo, and they were complaining about that. And then I think I was sympathising because that's just really boring. And then everybody was like, oh, 8 hours of promo. Oh, poor old Greta Van Fleet. And then what was one of the ones that...
It was like, try doing 8 hours in ER.
Which I love. It's brilliant.
I mean, it's valid, I guess. But you are allowed to complain. Usually when people are complaining, it's just they're tired, and regardless of what's happening, it's making them a bit tired.
Are you tired?
I'm tired right now, yeah.
Yeah. So is this excruciating?
No.
Do you want people to sympathise?
If we had to do 8 hours straight of just this.
Yeah, that would be pretty exhausting.
I think you'd crack before me.
Yeah, I'm on the verge of cracking now. We've done 4 minutes.
But I thought I'd crack.
Yeah. You would crack, yeah. You would crack because you'd see me cracking and then you'd crack in sympathy.
Yeah, I'd get upset. I'd get upset and strum up because you're cracking.
And then I'd pull myself together because I've seen you get upset. But that's the whole thing. So I think that those... this is one of the points that I made in the long form extrapolation of the James Hetfield thing. I feel like we have each other in a situation like this. So the cracking... Yeah, you know, we can...
That's a creative thing, though, isn't it? Don't you have to have high sensitivity?
What do you mean?
Isn't creativity and sensitivity sort of linked?
It might be. Yeah,
so, like, because you're like a conduit for emotions, and then you send it into art. And if you're not sensitive, He's just going to be like, oh, I'm walking down the road making songs saying that.
All of his songs would be like, there'd be sort of those tropish titles like Cruising Down the Highway.
Yeah.
And then it would literally just be a song about cruising down the highway.
Yeah, seeing a chick on the street. Not a chicken.
cruising for chicks down the highway. Not that that's, you know, but there wouldn't be any euphemism in there or any
emotion.
It would just be literally the act of driving a car down a motorway.
Maybe, is that a downfall? That loads of creatives and sensitive people all bunched into one industry and it can blow up?
Well, okay, one of the things, it's hard to say what the worst thing is, I think. But what we could do is spend the next hour listing some things that are bad, and then at the end we'll decide which one is the worst.
Okay.
Should we do that? What do you think?
Yeah.
All right.
Do you want me to write them down?
Yeah, write them down. So the first thing, because we talked about Greta Van Fleet's 8-hour promo stint, let's talk about promo.
The pitfalls of promo.
Well, promo as a pitfall in itself.
Okay.
So one of the things that happened to the darkness was we had Big Album.
Big
Album.
Very big.
It was big, wasn't it? And then for the whole of that campaign, we were just saying yes to everything. We were on every TV show.
Do you remember your first TV interview? We were like, yeah, look at me, I'm on the TV.
I remember the first TV camera being present for a thing.
How'd you feel?
Well, it was a show called Roadies, so it was kind of talking about roadies.
Oh, that's on YouTube now, I think.
Yeah, probably. And we played a gig in Reading. And I think one of our roadies that they were covering put the wrong kind of fuel in the van. So it just broke down in Holloway.
That's a really bad mistake.
Yeah, it was a bad. And it's not even the only time that happened.
How?
I don't know. It's happened like 3 times to us.
Was it diesel? It was supposed to be
I think you put petrol in a diesel and vice versa happened in like a Volkswagen Transporter van. No, that was Dan. And it was really funny because I don't know how he did it. So when you've got to put petrol in the van, you just go to the normal bit. Mm. For some reason, he found himself in the bit where lorries go.
No.
I don't know why he was in there. And then the only thing you can get there is diesel. So it was.
So he just accepted it.
He thought, well, it must be diesel because this is where I am and that's what's available.
That's not how it works.
That's what he thought, and then that's what happened. And
was your dad very disappointed in him?
I don't know if Dad ever found out about it or ever will. I think he was disappointed in himself and he gets that thing where he's like so defensive about it. It's like he's not just in denial, he's angry with us for sort of like challenging him on it. He's like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? Then there's only diesel there. You know, well, you're in the wrong part of the garage. You know, you can't say anything to Dan about those things, you know.
We should send this clip to him.
Yeah, he'd love it. He would really like that, I think. So that was the first TV thing we had. And then
was it actually on TV?
It was on TV, yeah. I think it was on like Channel Arse at about 1 million o'clock when no one's watching it. And but it was, you know, like it was probably like Come Dine With Me type format. So it was, there was a voiceover narrating it, and it was Suggs. And he sort of was quite disparaging. I was sort of trying to be funny because there was a camera there, and I was talking about how, like, I think I was saying that, like, Tom, who was the roadie that did the mistake, he was my guitar tech, and I was saying that he was my rock, and that now he's kind of, I think I was trying to compare myself to Lady Diana again, and he was Paul Burrell to my Lady Diana. And then after Lady Diana passed away, Paul Burrell was selling photos of her or something. I don't know. He was doing something or talking about his time with her in a salacious way to earn money on TV. And that's what I said Tom was doing. And then I think Suggs just said, that's really funny, and just sort of made me feel like a bit of a prick.
So straight away, didn't like
straight away, yeah. The first thing that happened was Suggs made me feel like a bit of a prick on TV. So that wasn't my favourite experience.
What about first interview on TV, like on CD UK or something like that?
I remember the first one I did, because I think I was a bit tired, maybe a bit hungover. I was sitting like this. And it was like a really unflattering in this area. And I was just like, yeah, I don't care. Maybe that's
a bit. Was that your one with... was Gonzo someone?
Who's Gonzo?
Or was it that other guy? That music journalist guy who recently did a TikTok?
Who?
He's a famous music guy. Music journalist. He's just a music interviewer.
You talking about Zane Lowe?
Yeah, was it him?
No,
it
wasn't
him. Where
you
sat there all like sprawled out.
No, no. I'm not sure if I've ever been interviewed by him properly, have I?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's video footage of him.
Is
it? I think you look very uninterested in it. Disinterested.
I don't know. He never liked me, and I think I was probably just a bit...
He did a nice TikTok recently.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, it was cool. But I think, you know, because we've got 8 or 9 albums out now, and I think, you know, a lot of people like him. Chris Moyles was always a bit dismissive of us, and now he's kind of always trying to get us on his show and saying nice things about us. And one or two people like that have definitely reassessed their position on what we were and what we are, I suppose. But better late than never.
Is it because you're so big and people don't like to like things that are popular?
Well, I expect they were a bit sick of the sight of us. It's fair enough, we were everywhere for a minute.
Yeah.
And I was a bit sick of it, you know, obviously. You know.
So. But was that the first TV interview?
I just can't remember.
Were you ever excited to do your first interview?
Well, I suppose I was, if I had to imagine what I was like, because I just can't remember it properly. I remember the first time I did an actual talk show, and it was the Frank Skinner one.
Was that the first one?
I think it was the first one I did as an individual, and the rest of the guys weren't there. So we'd always do things where we played a song and then said a few words or had a chat or something like that, but we'd all be there. And then that was the first one I did on my own. I didn't want to do it because I always had this sort of, it was already at the point where I thought, well, is he just going to take the piss out of me or something? Or
yeah, I remember I saw that one.
Yeah.
You were talking about how other people were being mean to you.
Yeah.
In it. You could tell that you were
happy. Do you know how nervous I was?
Very nervous.
Yeah, I was really nervous. I was so nervous that I decided to try and take the edge off my nerves by snorting about 2 grams of cocaine before I went on.
You managed to sit very still.
I don't know how I did it. See, that's the whole thing. I think, like...
So you were looking a bit pasty.
One of my... I was fucking nauseous. My heart was pounding and I thought I was going to be sick the whole time. But the... you know, weirdly, it didn't have the calming effect that I was hoping it would have. And I ended up...
Does it usually calm you down?
No. I don't know why I thought it would. It's just like... anyway, I got that all wrong, really. And but I think I just had an idea of how it was going to go, and it didn't. I just didn't say the things I expected to. Yeah. And at no point did I relax into it or anything like that. And
I wonder why.
Yeah. But as, you know, as a sober person, when I've done those things now, it's like I settle into it. And then there's just huge gaps, and I'm just really enjoying the awkwardness. And sometimes, like, I noticed that I was on a breakfast thing with Lorraine Kelly, who I love. I mean, so every time she's talked to me, I've just really enjoyed it. It's been really good fun. But then there was a lot of reaction afterwards and people saying, well, that was really awkward. It's like, well, it went really well, actually.
Yeah, but you like the awkwardness.
I do, yeah. I'm the only person in the room that likes it.
Think I saw that too. I think you were pausing, maybe. The pauses were quite long. You were a bit too relaxed. Because you're supposed to perform, aren't you?
No, I didn't.
But you're just like this, like, hey, Lorraine. Like, as if you were in her kitchen having a chat.
Yeah, but there's such a thing as contemplative silence, isn't there?
That's the thing. Yeah, it's good for TV.
just like two people who respect each other just having a little moment.
It's like the biggest fear for a TV producer and radio producer.
Well, fuck them people.
Is any silence?
No, fuck them. It's a conversation.
I'm not condemning you. I'm just saying that's why people aren't used to it.
I hate it when you see a conversation where the cadence is totally artificially ramped up. And what's wrong with dead air?
I guess if you only have 7 minutes and 3 of those.
That's not my problem. That sounds like a them problem. Who cares?
You had your legs crossed. You seemed happy.
I was really happy. Yeah. I just had a great time.
Yeah.
I was just pleased to see her because I hadn't seen her since back in the days when we were kind of doing stuff and being successful.
Yeah, she's nice.
You know, she's lovely, yeah. Really nice.
What about, you were on the last leg, you seemed pretty chill.
I think I was nervous on that one.
You seemed reasonably relaxed.
But that's not, there's no comfort zone there, and there's an audience and stuff as well. It's a bit weird, I think.
Yeah, and there's people trying to crack jokes, which it makes me feel awkward.
I hate it when people crack jokes.
Well, especially if they're under pressure to do so.
Yeah. Well, then, because when somebody does it, the obligation is to laugh.
Mm-hmm. Even if it's not funny.
And it seldom is to a person that's sitting there all nervous and not looking forward to when it's their turn to say a thing. You're not going to laugh at anything.
But you're good at talking.
Yeah, but I'm not very good at laughing. That's the problem.
Not fake laughing.
You said what?
You should do that next time.
Yeah, I will.
You'll like blow the sound mic, the lapel mic.
For everyone in the editing trick. I don't know. It's anything. It's always like that same thing. If it's not singing or dancing or playing guitar, it just makes me nervous because it's not my job.
Yeah.
I don't like doing other people's jobs.
Well, you're doing your job, but not an aspect of it that you wanted.
But is it my job, though?
I don't know. Is it part of it? No one else can go on there and talk for you.
Why is it necessary for me to talk at all? What did they ask me about on the last leg?
Cat suits. They did, didn't they? Didn't they say something about a cat suit? Oh, and what car do you drive? Do you live in a big house? You made a funny joke about that.
Did I?
You made everyone laugh.
Did I say that I lived in a big house and drove a nice car?
Yeah, but you like set it up with, oh, I could never say something like that. I'm modest or something. And then you afterwards said, okay. Yeah, of course I drive a big car and I'm modest.
And live in a fast house. That's the sort of thing that would happen to me. I'd get that wrong. That'd be the way around I'd say it.
This is why I can't go on TV. I'd be terrible on TV.
No, you're really good on this, though.
Yeah, but I'd be like...
You were great on Russell's thing as well.
Yeah, but he's a big character. I'm better next to big characters. You're a big character.
Thank you.
You know what I mean? I couldn't be the big character and have a small little
character.
Yeah, but
in this situation, less so with Russell's one, I think you're quite commanding. You are.
Is that you're saying back off?
Well, no, I don't mind it. I like it, actually. I think you drive the conversation forward and pull me out of... The what they call the tributaries that I end up sort of meandering down.
You mean the made up scenarios usually?
Oh, I just think it's important to paint the picture, isn't it?
What, of Jennifer Lopez in a cottage
and her and her chihuahua have got the same outfit on.
And she's wearing Juicy Couture tracksuit.
She might be in a terraced house in Cardiff. So you don't know, do you?
I don't know too
well. You don't know anything. That's the whole thing. This is what I always say to you. You don't know anything.
Fine.
But I don't mean it in a bad way. I'm just saying we don't know, do we? It's important to doubt, isn't it? And then wonder, and then impose like fantasy scenarios on everything that you're saying.
Interesting.
Mm. Don't you think?
I mean, I'm pretty sure she's not in the car.
You're pretty sure?
Yeah.
But you're 100% sure?
But I don't need to know. She's displayed the version of her that she wants us to see.
Mm. And that's what makes her unrelatable.
Yeah, she needs to go to Cardiff.
So here's one of the pitfalls of the music trade that's shitty. People's perception of you. Isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, like, and then they, whatever that happens to be, they'll have a view on that, and it might be that you're, for example, when I go on the last leg and I say I live in a big house and I drive a fast car, which happens to be true.
Or is it true?
It's not the biggest house in the world or the fastest car, but compared to...
The Cardiff terraced house.
The terraced house in Cardiff that Jennifer Lopez did that fashion shoot in with the dog that was doing a shit in the corner in her Juicy Couture. Which isn't, I didn't, and I actually said it wasn't, it was a market knockoff of a Juicy Couture.
A couture.
Couture.
I didn't know that was a designer thing, anyway.
Well, it is, so...
But people's perception of you. Do you want people to perceive you as someone who drives a fast car and lives in a big house? Or do you want to be perceived as...
This is what I'm saying about promo. It's like the questions like that aren't things that you should be obliged to answer. We're musicians, aren't we? We're songwriters. Like if I do a song called I Believe in a Thing Called Love, you don't need to go to an interview and then have the bloke saying, but do you believe in a thing called love? Listen to the fucking song! You know, isn't that the bit, that's the bit where you're supposed to express yourself and declare those kinds of opinions and beliefs, isn't it?
Is this the problem with promo? that it's not a music show, it's a celebrity show.
Yeah, the problem with promo is it's seldom about music. And if you're there to promote music, you're obliged to bring other parts of your life, existence and opinions and all that sort of stuff.
In order to sell the music.
Yeah, but why is that necessary?
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, I don't care. I don't care who Steven Tyler votes for. I don't care what car he drives. I don't care where he lives. I don't actually know any of those things.
Dolly Parton isn't well known for not saying which political party she votes for because she knows it would get rid of 50% of her audience.
Mm.
So no one knows. She just is like,
you don't know who I vote for either, do you?
No, but I don't know if you even vote, do you?
Well, that's another thing you don't know.
So I know which way you'd lean.
Hey. Go on. I'm interested in this.
Are you passionate about people who don't have a lot?
The vulnerable section.
The vulnerable people. Aren't you?
I'm always interested in the civil rights movement as well.
What about economically?
Not my problem, baby. Well, I don't understand the economics, I don't think.
I think you understand the economics that matter to you.
Well, yeah, I do, because I'm trying to run a fucking mansion, aren't I? I'm just kidding. I've got to put petrol in the motor, haven't I? I'm not driving my own electric cars. They're rubbish. No, I'm not saying that. No, but I'm sorry, just explain what you mean again.
What are you talking about?
Well, the economics. You said you
economically,
said
sometimes socially people are left-wing, but economically they're conservative.
Right, so what you think I'm economically conservative?
No, I think if it came to the crunch, you'd be quite liberal.
Yeah, I like paying tax.
Do you?
I do.
But that's what I mean. Some people are very...
There's a myth about Switzerland. Everyone thinks that you go to Switzerland to avoid paying tax, but you don't. There's actually certain cantons where you can be clever about the type of business that you incorporate, and then you can do like funneling systems that dodge. There's a lot of manoeuvring you can do, but in the canton that I live in, you can't do those things. And actually, the first year I was here, I paid a lot more than I normally would in England. Yep. So, and I don't mind doing that. There are very few people that I'd say live in Switzerland and are, you know, comparatively, there's far fewer homeless people. And everybody
they
earns,
can't afford to be.
Well, everybody earns good money here. They're paid fairly.
No, but I just meant sometimes people are socially liberal.
Right.
Well, actually, economically conservative.
But so would they vote then? What matters is what happens when it comes to the crunch.
They'd probably be the swingers in America. they'd vote for who's pushing through policies that made sure that their money isn't affected.
Yeah.
But they probably say are very progressive in their social, like would want social care and free healthcare and all that stuff. But probably might feel reserved about paying more tax or whatever other structures are involved in tax. Anyway, that's not to do with perception of being a celebrity.
Yeah, I know, but the thing is, those sort of nuanced conversations about where you sit on the left or right wing.
Yeah, it can really ruin a pop star's career in certain countries. Yeah. I don't think.
But you're almost obliged to bring that into the promotional.
Especially in America, like when Hillary Clinton had all the pop stars. Like Katy Perry, and then you get condemned for not using your platform.
Yeah.
For that, but you don't. I don't know why.
And then what if you actually do something? If you do something that seems to be altruistic, or you're trying to sort of help in an area, then you can get accused of doing something that's performative.
Champagne socialist.
Yeah, that's another one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's best to.
So basically, I think it applies to all celebrity, doesn't it? Or any being in the public eye, you're going to get some sort of disparaging label attached to you. And it might as well just say, kick me.
Yeah, so it's better to have mystique around certain things.
Mystique, yeah, because then why should those things... Like, this is another episode that we'll have to do in the future about separating art from the artist.
Yeah.
Because, like, if I turn around and said, oh, Boris Johnson has been my hero for years, I think everything he did was amazing, I would probably lose...
A lot.
Whereas, if I said the opposite, I would lose a lot. If I say nothing, that's how it should be.
But I guess that's never cropped up, has it?
No, because I always refuse to be drawn on those things. But I think if, like, you can apply the same logic to more or less anything that isn't music. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, if you ask me a question, ask me a typical question that you might hear someone ask me in an interview. Let's try this. Let's see how the promo actually goes. You know how this goes.
Yeah.
How are you doing? You're right.
There's so many.
Thanks a lot for the opportunity to talk
You're
to you
welcome.
Today. I'm really pleased to be able to promote this next record, which I'm so proud of. We worked really hard on it for the last 2 years. I'd probably try and lead the conversation down that road so that we have to talk about the music. But you, as a journalist, would pull it away from there.
Oh, so I have to pull it away from that completely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's it like being sober?
What?
What's it like being sober?
So the only way to win that one is to say...
Don't know what you're talking about.
I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
But then it would imply... that there's some sort of struggle, wouldn't there?
Yeah, people were like, oh, I didn't want to talk about
prickly.
It.
Prickly.
Yeah.
So, and
touched
then, or I could say, well, actually, you know, I do have a little eggnog at Christmas, you know, and maybe a glass of wine if I'm at a
relapse.
Fancy restaurant. Relapse, yeah. Failure.
Failed.
What's the other one?
Failed.
What's it like being sober? Oh, it's brilliant. Being sober has changed my life completely, and I wish I'd done it earlier. And what's that? It's like evangelical kind of won't stop bothering on about being sober.
Will you ever make an album as good as your first?
No. Oh, wait, that's the wrong answer as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So people just lose interest in your current work.
I don't know. Is it true, though?
What do you mean?
That your first album's your best album?
No, the second from last one is the best one.
You should just cancel.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Well, it's a proper... concept record.
I liked your second album too.
Yeah.
I know you don't like it because of association.
Because of what? What do you think I don't
like?
I feel
like you associate bad stuff with. You said you weren't. Well, I
no, I just don't think that the songs are as good on that one. I love the production. I think working with Roy Thomas Baker was brilliant. But the songs weren't as good.
Where would you rank it out of all the albums?
I think it goes joint first, Permission to Land, Easter is Cancelled. Third place. Third and fourth place, joint. Oh, God, that's difficult, actually. Well, the thing is, like, Last of Our Kind's got Barbarian and Open Fire on it.
Yeah.
And also a lot of shit as well.
If you could put them on the second album.
What about if the second album had...
That's a B-side.
Yeah. The second album, if it had Barbarian. What was the other one I said? Open Fire.
Open Fire.
Japanese Prisoner of Love.
What, is that on Palm and Smile?
Yeah. The Buccaneers. Of Hispaniola.
These are all my favourite songs.
Yeah, these are the best ones. Solid Gold.
Heart One.
Heart Explodes. As the ballad at the end of the first side.
This is a whole new album that you've added.
That would actually be a really strong record. Produced by Dan Hawkins and Roy Thomas Baker in conjunction. Now that's a record.
Yeah. So third and fourth are... One Way Ticket and this other one.
No, I didn't put... I would say...
This third.
One Way Ticket just in terms of the songs. I mean, I don't care for the songs.
None of them.
I would say none of them. Now, if I said that in an interview,
mm-hmm.
all hell would break loose, especially if it happens to be the second record that we're promoting.
Yeah, if you were in the middle of promoting it.
Yeah.
But it sold millions of copies.
Well, yeah, it sold a million records in an age of declining record sales. It did really, really well.
And it's very beloved by your fans.
Particularly in America, they seem to... The people that declare that to be their favourite with the most regularity and frequency is probably Americans. I don't know why.
Is It Just Me is good.
And that's actually... We didn't tour that one in America. It's the only album we didn't tour in America.
That's weird.
Yeah. So maybe absence makes the heart grow fonder. I won't tell that to our agent, I don't think.
No. People love Bold as well.
Yeah.
They love that whole album.
And they're wrong. I'm just kidding. It's good. You know, I'm not obliged to like her stuff.
Nope.
But I also don't think I should be obliged to pretend that I like it.
No.
You know, for the sake of promoting stuff, you know. And the whole thing about promotion, I think, is that it's stuff that you do to sort of engender that spirit of goodwill between yourself and your label partners.
But does it make you feel icky inside?
Every single time. There are journalists that I love talking to. Simon Price, Matt Everett, Pat Carty. There are lots of others, too. There are lots of others. And there are some that I just fucking hate. And I'll never talk to them again. I'll give you one example. Second album, there's this guy called, I think his name was PG or something like that. And he'd spoken to us on the first record and was pretty cool, you know. So the second record, which is your favourite, right?
It's not my favourite, but...
You like it?
I like it a lot.
Okay, well...
I like...
What do you like about it?
I think it is... The production is amazing, I think.
Yeah.
I think some of the themes are funny.
Mm-hmm.
I like the guitar solos.
Yeah, I did those.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
I don't know, I like some of them.
Yeah.
Some of them I don't like, and I do like every song, but I don't love every song on it.
Yeah. So PG welcomed us. And
English Country Garden's my favourite.
Okay, cool. I was pleased to see PG because I'd had a good experience talking to him before. And then we separated into two, because he was for some reason quite a big deal. He's an Italian journalist, and he takes photographs and talks to you at the same and you know, so in the course of the interview, he'll do the pictures and the chat. And he wanted to break us up into two groups. And I went in with Richie, who was the bass player that replaced Frankie on that record. And Dan went in with Ed, who was the drummer. And then PG just took that opportunity to try and drive a wedge between me and my brother as part of his article. He just wanted to talk about friction between the brothers.
Scoop.
He was just looking for scoop. And trying to sort of goad each of us to say something nasty about the other by saying, oh, the other one said this and the other one, you know what I mean? And I've read it that he said this, and just trying to wind us up. And like, what kind of fucking asshole does that if they give a shit about the people that they're interviewing?
Yeah, it's not good.
No, it's not good.
It's mean.
It's just cunty.
It's like being forced to meet with people you don't like. But then maybe in other jobs it would be like... dealing with certain clients is painful.
Yeah.
Meetings and like reviews, all that sort of stuff that you have to do that you hate.
Mm.
That's just not even the job that you're doing, but you have all this, you have to do it for the sake of the job and the sake of the employees, the sake of the client.
What I used to do with a promo thing would be I would do an interview, and if it was a hatchet job, which often it can be, you know, or if it was just regurgitated questions, if it was just something uncomfortable about the process of doing it, I would add them to this list of people that I never wanted to speak to again. And then, you know, I was just looking for opportunities to pull out of stuff and be able to say, well, actually, last time they wrote this, so we won't be talking to them, sort of thing. Which works, you know.
So that's the first thing that's bad. Oh, people's perception. We went back to promo by accident.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're talking about people's perception of you.
Mm.
So,
well, the fact that they have a perception that informs their opinion of your music at all, why should that be? It's the music, isn't it?
And also the performance, if you're a band that... Okay, you wouldn't perform the way you did.
Yeah, okay. Well, I suppose when I say music, I mean like the overall experience of witnessing what we do.
Yeah.
Or what one does. That's the only thing that matters. Like,
do you think... Does people's perception of you, if you're aware of it, affect how you write? Does it get into your head?
You mean like if people think you're an asshole, you try and write songs that make you seem like a nice guy?
Well, just like it would bring you down, wouldn't it?
Well, it's just more noise that you have to try and ignore and tune out to be able to do anything creative. I mean, there's no sort of... there's no impetus to write songs when you've got all that stuff going on.
But I guess you said in another episode, the point of making art is to find your audience. So that promo is doing that for you.
The idea of promo is to expand your audience.
And find your audience, right?
No, I think the music
will
find
us.
Because when I was saying audience, I wasn't talking about like a literal room full of people. I just meant people who like consume what you do or are interested
in
it.
But how are they consuming if no one tells them about it?
You mean it's a necessary evil?
Yeah.
But it is evil.
Yeah, it could be. Unless they're nice. But yeah, you can find an audience.
Okay, well, forget. I mean, you're talking about like why promo exists. But actually what I'm saying is the experience of doing promo can be really like, it's the thing that fills you with the most trepidation. It's the thing that you look forward to the least. It can be, I can sit here for another half an hour and list like all of the terrible experiences I've
had. What's the worst headline?
Serial rapist alert.
But that's not about you.
No, but let's have a look at that. Let's give you an example of how the press operates.
Where did you put it?
I put it behind the amp. Just give me a second. So this is an example of how the UK press works. And we'll probably do a thing about takedowns at some point anyway, won't we?
Yeah.
That's on our list. So, cut to 2004. After a meteoric rise during the year 2003, The Darkness played at the Brit Awards in Earl's Court or wherever it was. And uniquely performed two songs during the ceremony. I don't think anybody's done that. Well, they certainly hadn't done it up to that point, and they probably haven't done it since. For some reason, we did two songs. We won three Brit Awards. I can't remember the categories, but nobody in the history of the Brits up to that point had achieved more. So the Evening Standard's coverage of the Brits focused heavily on the Brit Parties special. And look at how they've arranged the front page there. A picture of me playing my guitar next to the headline, Serial Rapist Alert. Now, I always keep this on the wall to remind me of how much of a bunch of fucking cunts these people are. That's naughty, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because it has your... Like, that's how newspapers work. You put the
image... Someone's taking the piss.
Yeah.
Totally.
And, like, that's not a proper photo.
That was a big night for us. Imagine my mum looking at that. Come on. So I have that on the wall to remind me. Come on, guys.
They could have chosen a better photo as well.
Yes.
In some ways, they knew what they were doing because they blocked your face from that.
To make me look like a rapist.
No, but they knew that if they put your full profile in that
I'd be coming after them, yeah.
Well, that would almost... They could get maybe sued for that, couldn't they? Because it's very blurry.
It's really naughty.
But you're playing a guitar and
yeah,
you can't really see your face, so...
Yeah. They've done enough to get away with it, really, but it's you can see what they're up to, can't you? Yeah. Okay, so promo. We've done promo. What's next?
We did perception.
Perception.
Touring.
Touring.
You love touring.
I do love touring. Why do I love touring so much?
Is it like escaping from the mundanity of your everyday life?
No, because my everyday life is where the chaos happens.
But do you find it exciting?
Do I find chaos exciting?
Well, is it...
Or being at home, or touring, you mean?
Being at home.
There's always something to do when I'm at home and I get to see my daughter.
Yeah.
So I love being at home.
But you didn't always have a daughter.
No, I didn't. I didn't always have a daughter. That's so true.
What was it like prior?
Trying to cast my mind back. I think I had dogs. I had a reason to get out of bed and do stuff, you know, responsibilities. And all that kind of stuff. But I didn't have routine, though. I didn't have, like, my life has always been chaotic when I'm not on the road because, like, there's no routine in the days.
Is that hard? Because now you do loads of stuff during the day.
Yeah, now I still would say I could do with more routine. I'm probably working on that at the moment.
I mean, you just need to adhere to a routine. Maybe.
Yeah, I have a tendency to procrastinate. Always have. But you can't do that on show day. That's why show day is extra good.
And
me.
Also there's a lot of sitting around.
Well, you call it sitting around.
Well, preparing mentally.
I call it acclimatising.
Yeah.
You know, I just sort of, because I want to be in the venue. I want to be sat there, sitting around. Oh yeah, maybe I call it that too.
Well, when I've worked on tours, my job's different. So sitting around wasn't really, I was a busybody. So if I was sitting around, I felt like something wasn't right. That's why.
Is that the same thing as when you wake up in the morning and you have mortal dread?
Yeah. I don't get that as much as I used to. You said it comes with age. Because I always know that I have to edit a video as soon as I wake up.
Yeah. So for me, I think mortal dread comes from
emptiness,
being a male of a certain age, probably in that danger zone that we talked about before.
Oh yeah, though I have had the mortal dread. I get like evening dread, I think.
But is it dread caused by, oh dear, have I completed all of the tasks that I was obliged to do today, or is it because my life is so empty?
Mine's probably to do with emptiness and lack of future. Like, I don't have anything to live for. You know what I mean? That's the dread. Like, I have nothing to live for. I can't keep saying that. So I'll cut it in.
Yeah, you're going to cut it.
I have nothing to live for.
Watch a bit of telly.
Yeah. But is that why musicians suffer when they're not on tour? Because there's the empty abyss. Chaos actually means, I think in Greek or Roman, zero, which means nothing, which means nothingness, and chaos comes from nothing. That's where the chaos rises from, versus structure and like lots of things happening. Chaos is if you break everything down to nothing. I think that's what, it, you know, like if you break down a civilization to nothing, there's chaos. So I think it's related to the zero. Some painter guy who I thought I wanted a date told me that.
I think chaos is something else.
I guess there's loads of different definitions, but you know the way people love to there's source things back.
Yeah, but there is another definition though, isn't there? And it's
I'm
something
not
to
defining
do with,
it very well because I have a really bad memory.
Yeah, but I've heard another one. I think it might have been...
Well, the opposite to the... It's chaos and order, isn't it? They're the two things. Yeah. That's the balance of life. You need to have both. Because if your life's too orderly, you get... It becomes stale. And if it becomes too chaotic, it becomes unmanageable and dangerous for you.
Yeah. Chaos is borrowed from the Greek word that means abyss.
Yeah. Staring into the abyss. That's what I said. You'd wake up and you have nothing. That's what I said about my future. Did I say that?
So why is like... So is it to do with like... this? When you say chaos as in a new beginning or everything's reduced to nothing and or like it's...
From chaos, order comes.
It's so weird because I always imagined staring into the abyss to be like a really peaceful moment.
Maybe because it's where creativity lives, maybe.
Or maybe I'm not seeing all the swirling gases and stuff.
The abyss doesn't mean anything can be in the abyss, right?
But isn't the abyss...
Abyss, it just means there's no order or structure, which is good for someone like you because you can take those bits and then create something from them. If it was order, we wouldn't be able to create anything from it.
I thought The Abyss was the movie that was set, like a science fiction movie set underneath the ocean featuring Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
It's a deep or seemingly bottomless chasm.
Yeah, but it's underwater, isn't it?
No.
Okay.
That movie might have been a bit...
It was. Hang on, The Abyss.
A wide or profound difference between people. Oh, a gulf.
It was a James Cameron movie featuring... and it says, one of the questions is, was The Abyss a flop?
It's not to do with water.
All right. Okay.
Anyway, you know, that's maybe why musicians struggle, maybe.
Because when they look into the abyss...
Just staring into the abyss, there's no order. And when there's no order... You know. Like I said, this is when people can't live in chaos. Chaos makes them uncomfortable. Some people function better with order. But it's supposed to be a balance of the two. So your show...
Why does The Abyss just give me serenity then?
Because anything can happen. And you like fantasy and potential, I think.
Because I'm Pisces.
Because you're Pisces.
Yeah, thought so.
Because it would be boring. You wouldn't like it if there was just order all the time. But maybe that's why you like show days, because there's order during the day and then the chaos is the show.
There's a 2 hours of abyss chaos.
Like, you don't know what's going to happen, do you?
Mm-mm.
Which you find comforting.
There's no point in even thinking about it. That's why I don't like rehearsal.
Yeah.
Maybe that's one of the things about music that you could say was bad. It's like if you're a person that really... feels like, you know, fail to prepare. No, you know that thing when people talk about preparation and how important that is. I think it all goes out the window because there's so many variables.
But because you're good at your craft, you have the right tools to tackle that.
No, but it's beyond that. I actually wouldn't enjoy it as much if it didn't all go wrong occasionally.
But if you couldn't, like, do play the guitar properly or have a good singing voice or look after it.
Well, that's hard. Yeah.
It's why you can handle it, because you're equipped like a soldier.
Like a soldier. Super soldier. Music soldier.
Your music soldier.
My music soldier. Yeah, I don't know if I can really declare that as a bad thing, really. Just like it.
Yeah, but what about when you're off touring, when you didn't have pets? Yeah. Or when you weren't briefly working with the darkness?
Mm.
How does that feel as a musician?
Well, I've all of that stuff, because you're talking about when I got sober and I stepped out of it for a minute.
I don't know how many years it was, but I don't know what you're doing.
I didn't do anything for about... I didn't do any darkness stuff for about 5 years.
And was it difficult to acclimatise?
Well, I kept doing music stuff, but it didn't have the same magic. I loved the people that I was working with, but it wasn't... I knew I could feel it wasn't doing the thing. You know, it wasn't doing that thing.
Spark?
There was something in it that wasn't abyssy enough for me.
But was it corporate-y stuff?
No, it wasn't even because of that. I was trying to... with the darkness, more or less every day, I try and sabotage it in some way or another. It's part of the fun of it. It's frustrating for my bandmates, I think, but they sort of love it at the same time. Like, I'll try and fuck up a show. I'll say stupid stuff in interviews. I'll shoot myself in the foot in lots of different ways. And then the fun bit is coming back from that, you know? Whereas in the projects that I was doing in between... if I was doing a show and I tried to sabotage it, then it would actually succeed and the whole fucking thing would fall apart, and it didn't have the sort of same...
Do you think that's the chaos and order thing, working in harmony?
I don't know,
like the bandmates are the order and you're the chaos and you work harmoniously to do
a maybe
show,
yeah,
that's on the edge but also functions.
Could be that, yeah. I'm definitely trying to pull it towards the edge all the time,
because if you were with, like, say Hot Leg or something,
like I've broken things, bones and stuff, in the act of doing really, really stupid stuff at the beginning of tours or halfway through tours. And it's always in the name of just being in the moment, and it's always damaging and makes the rest of the rest of the touring really difficult. But I love it.
But that's because it works, I guess, because you've got the harmony. Maybe, I don't know. Because when you were doing your solo stuff or with Hot Leg or whatever, you were sort of having to hold it all together as well as also be that...
Yeah, I didn't like to become... And it was weird, when we started doing Darkness again, the roles had changed a little bit, and I found myself being a bit more assertive in creative situations than Dan even, and Dan was always the leader, de facto leader. It's going back to normal now. Normal service has been resumed, I think.
I mean, Dan's the leader?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
It's how it should be, I think. Yeah, I don't want to do it.
So is a pitfall when you're not doing creative stuff? I don't know if that's a unglamorous side. Unglamorous side when you're off touring. Is that the unglamorous side? Like, if you just imagine a musician just sat.
Sitting at home.
Yeah, because they're not going to be playing gigs all the time. Well, some of them might be.
Whenever someone says unglamorous, I just think about like a bad toilet, you know. So, like, backstage, in a lot of instances, can be unglamorous.
Yeah.
I always think about the UK touring experience. If you're in theatres and stuff, you're all right. It's always, like, really nicely organised and the people are lovely and stuff. Club level, it can be a bit hit and miss. Some of them are amazing. Some of them feed you and look after you and are really pleased to have you. And some of them couldn't give a shit. They just couldn't give a shit. And then you're sitting on bloody sofas with needles sticking out of them, which is a real thing that's happened. You know, I'm not just saying that. That's actually a thing. You know, you never know what you're going to get. But then again, maybe that's some more lovely chaos.
Yeah.
It's not nice to have a nap on a sofa like that, though, I don't think.
No, and that's your main sofa.
It's usually the one that I slumber upon. It might be my needle, who knows?
Oh. But what other things are bad? I said on the last one, maintaining relationships, but I don't know if you like that question.
Well, I don't mind, yeah. You can talk about those if you like.
But I don't know.
We can talk about them. It's something that you hear, isn't it?
Well, Some people say never date an actor or a musician.
Mm-hmm. Why do they say that? Because they're scumbags.
No, I think there's probably the unfaithfulness that people worry about because they're interacting with more people probably than most people, and people who want to actively probably sleep with them.
Yeah.
So that's one.
That's a worry, I suppose, isn't it?
That's the first point. Any comments on that?
Yeah, but I mean, I think people tend to sleep with other people in the office that they work in the factory. Sometimes actually in the factory they'll do that, or in the office. You know, I just think that's people, that's humankind, isn't it?
Yeah, no, but I remember someone said to me, aren't you worried that he's gone and there's be loads of fans around them?
Just to clarify, you're not talking about me.
No, I'm talking... and I was like, no, no. That doesn't bother me. What? But maybe, did it bother me?
I think it did.
I don't think so. Only, what bothers me is someone who emotionally cheats rather than physically.
What is the difference between emotional and physical cheating?
Where someone finds a person and then they're like, start being each other's like crutch and being there for each other, and that person slowly becoming your person and... They're texting all the time. And you know when someone texts you and then that little smile goes on their face? When they read a message. But like nothing physical has happened. Or something physical could happen. But emotionally cheating. I think I almost... Did I almost catch him? No, I remember my ex had a... There was a sound engineer that started working with him in the band and I didn't like it.
Was it like... did they suddenly start talking about them?
Yeah, he started talking about her.
That happened to me, like my ex-wife started talking about somebody, just like somebody I'd never heard of before. So you go on tour and then you come back and your ex-wife's just always talking about this guy, Jan.
Like, his actual name.
Yeah, of course it's his actual name. I don't give a fuck. Fuck him. Fuck him.
Okay. We'll get off Jan.
Yeah, fuck you, Jan. So like, and then like, Jan's just doing this and Jan's doing that. I don't give a fuck about Jan. Why are you talking about Jan all the time? You know, go and have an affair if you want to, but don't fucking bore me with that shit, you know?
Yeah.
And like, and then I went to have a dinner with Jan and my ex.
He's called Jan.
Where's Jan? I just fucking never stopped listening. Oh, I don't want to hear about Jan. He's boring. He's fucking dull. And I was sitting there watching them having a conversation. I was like, you guys must think I'm fucking stupid. You know, and I was the one who was on tour.
Yeah, so I guess that can happen too. Mm. Well, when my ex started talking, this girl would come in when the normal sound engineer, who I knew, because I knew everyone in the band and I knew the crew, because I just known them for so long. He's like, yeah, she plays this song when she's testing the audio. And I'm like, why are you telling me
who cares about what?
And then he was like, she likes to knit. She knit this really blanket. It was really cute. I was like, did you just say something she did was cute? Did you just say something she did was cute?
Red flag.
So then when I was on, we had one argument once when I was in Torquay on tour, and he rang me and he then started talking about her, and I was like, nah, this conversation's over. I can't stop talking. Like, just need to get with her, but don't talk to me about
That's what I was like. It's like, well, you know.
So then I had a sense of jealousy, but it was more like just,
You know that thing when did you meet the person?
No,
because I did meet the person, and then there's real intensity, like really trying to be that wide eyed, kind of like completely just trying to over. I don't know. It was all just a really feeble performance, and it's so obvious, and you see it, and it's like, but you know, at that point, I'm the first to admit I may have emotionally checked out myself at that point, but you know, nonetheless. Why do people do that?
Yeah, and emotionally bringing someone, it's just, no, that's what a relationship is if it isn't emotionally bonding with someone along with all the other things. And then when someone does it with someone else, it's like, well, go be with that person then. Mm. Why are you... And then I knew that he was trying to cheat with someone because he kept getting little text messages after going back from his US tour. And he put the name as like an ambiguous unisex name.
Like, what would it be?
You're not going to get this one.
Let me aim for the ambiguous one. Jamie, but J-A-I-M-I-E.
No.
Okay, please let me have
So it's like a normal girl's name, but he had to try and make it not look it like that. So what you do to disguise a name, you like change it slightly, don't you?
Right, okay. So instead of Phyllis, it would have been Philip. It's probably not going to be Phyllis, was it?
Any American,
probably
Phyllis.
Wasn't Phyllis. Okay, so instead of Michaela, it would have been Michael.
Oh no, it would be like Mick instead of M-I-C, probably.
Oh, God.
So it was, I think he put it in as Hans, but it would have been Hannah, probably.
Oh, my God.
And then he texts, and then I was kind of noticing it. I like to observe before I strike.
Yeah, I know.
So I observed him for like a week or so, just being like, you know, I'm not going to jump to conclusions. Mm. And he'd always refer to that person if they text, like, as a they. So trying to keep them unisex.
God.
And then he was texting someone. Like, he wasn't, like, you know when your partner's doing something unusual because you're around them all the time. And then we were lying in bed, penciling. Penciling is in there.
I love that.
Yeah. I was doing my 10th pencil. And then the lights are off and I was just like, I know that you've been texting someone that you met backstage or in America on tour. And that you wanted, and he was like, "How do you know?" And I was like, "I could just tell." Did you? He's like, "I couldn't. Nothing happened. And I didn't manage to get with her or something." Said something ambiguous.
So that's even worse because then, like,
he didn't say it. He was just like, "Nothing's happening," but something is. Why would you be texting a girl that you met backstage at your own show in America when you're like, "Come on"?
It's single man stuff. That is.
Yeah, you're not supposed to be doing that if you have a partner.
Yeah,
you know the boundaries when it comes to that sort of stuff. I wasn't angry. I was pleased that I found out my detective work was correct. I'd also sort of emotionally checked out.
That's the thing is, like, if you have the wherewithal to study it from a distance before striking, you're clearly emotionally checked out, and it's at that point it's a game.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Or you're so frustrated that relationships, we were together for another year after that, so it didn't end. Relationship, I don't know.
I did a funny thing. I actually paid for Jan and my ex-wife to go to Berlin to watch a Tool concert.
You told me that.
And got them into the concert as well, because it's difficult to get tickets for Tool stuff. But of course, when you're Justin Hawkins from the fucking darkness, you can do what you like. No, just kidding.
Hey, Maynard.
Maynard, love you. And Danny as well. Met him at the tributes. He was lovely. Great band. I'm going to go and see Tool in one day. I don't know when, but so I paid for them to go there, and I just, what I loved about it was just always being able to sort of stand there, watch them, and just know.
But wasn't it weird? Did you not think it was weird to go to Berlin with your wife?
What I loved about it was to do those things and then be able to watch them squirm.
Did they not invite you?
I was busy touring to pay for their visit to Berlin, pay for the hotel and the flights and the tickets. You know,
did you pay for one or two rooms?
I paid for one. I think they were sharing a room.
Yeah, it's a bit weird.
It was a bit weird.
I didn't go that far.
Okay, maybe I have a tendency to take things a bit further than most, I suppose. But I think, you know, just in the, you know, having a touring existence, I just wanted my wife to be happy, you know.
So the pitfall is when you're away from your partners, other people can sneak in.
Yeah, the old sneak in happens, doesn't it? I mean, I think the pitfall that I would... To summarise that particular pitfall, if your relationship isn't robust and you're not madly in love and you're not expressly and, you know...
But you know the way some people have jealousy and trust issues? Some people can't go 2 days away from their partner. Like people are like, he went away for the weekend. He's really sad about it. I'm like, that's 2 days. How can you be sad for 2 days?
I don't think it's about that, though. I think, like, in my particular situation, I think that the... relationship was lacked certain types of intimacy that I won't go into here. But in addition to that, there was quite a lot of distance as well. Emotional distance and physical intimacy were not things that... emotional and physical distance were prevalent throughout... the 5 years of my marriage. Should I be talking about this?
No. But I mean, like, that sort of lifestyle can maybe drive someone.
Yeah, okay. So if there's any, if there
or
are
create
any,
issues that weren't there before.
I don't think that's
like
true.
Like some people are like that's what I meant. My point was some people would say don't date an actor and a musician, musicians, because they think they're like promiscuous rock stars going out touring and drinking for prolonged periods of time.
Yeah, but it goes both ways. It's just absence, you know, and it's people who are unfulfilled in that area, they're going to look elsewhere.
But do you think some people just aren't cut out for that?
Well, I think that's true across all walks of life. It's not just actors and musicians.
Some people think that if you're the actor or the musician, their craft becomes before the relationship.
Yeah. I think in a lot of cases that's true. A musician that I worked with closely for many years used to say to his girlfriends, just to let you know, the music comes first.
I think it's fair enough.
Yeah, I actually, and at the time, when I first heard that he'd said that, I was like, that's a bit mean, isn't it? It's a person. And then now I'm like, well,
I think it's important.
Thank God he did that, because he was so driven. It was like the momentum and ambition and stuff that was making up for my self-sabotage, you know.
But I think it's important. I felt always second place, to the piano.
Yeah.
But I think being so gifted is amazing, and supporting someone with that talent, like, is great. Like, if they need to practice for 6 hours a day,
I can honestly say that if, given the opportunity, if I had a wife that was like that, gifted, talented, could go on tour, I would stay at home. I would learn how to cook. I'd do the laundry, which I enjoy anyway. Mm-hmm. I would...
I think you'd still need to do what you do, though, because I think you'd need to be stimulated in that way.
Yeah, and then I'd grow resentful.
Yeah.
Bitter. And pretty soon I'd be cheating, you know. No.
No, but I think you're that type of person that needs that, no matter what. But you find that frustrating, don't you?
What?
That in relationships that people don't understand that you need to go into the studio and get into the flow for like half a day or a day. They get
jealous.
Yeah,
I think it's like to do it properly, you can't just walk into a studio and go, right, I've got 2 hours, that should be enough to do 6 takes of a vocal. You really need to...
But I think from an outsider's point of view, when you see, if you're not that, and I maybe am that with certain things, and no one knows when they're that. Mm. When you see, like, you'll see a guitar, and then you'll pick it up randomly. And then and then you'll start twiddling on it. But then you could be doing that for the next 2 minutes or the next 45 minutes.
Sometimes
and
time
it won't,
just...
it won't
time
matter.
Time elongates to me. If I've got a guitar in my hand, it could be hours.
Like, we could be, like, going to do something, and then I see you reach for the guitar, and I'm like, oh, no.
Is that why you sometimes dive? No!
But... And to partners, that can be frustrating because you're like, we're trying to do something here and you're prioritizing that. But so unless in the partnership, the music is part of the partnership.
Yeah.
Then it's going to be an issue because you're just going to have to. It's the same with my ex. He'd put his finger on a piano key and then it would just, their stuff would just start happening because they're just so into it. Mm. And it can be really frustrating. So you just have to.
It's good to get the other perspective,
But I can, like, you have to think about it as the partner, but in a different way. You can't be like, oh, it's so inconsiderate of them to do that. You have to think, well, this is part, they need that, you know, just like I might need an hour alone or something, or I need to do something, you know.
I still can't get over the fact that it was one room in Berlin. Why didn't I see it? I did see it. I knew it was happening, isn't it?
Funny, did you just have that realization then?
it's just a really funny thing to think about. It's like, how stupid must they think I am? It must have been like this unspoken thing where we all knew what was happening and I was just paying for it.
Well, you know you're talking about a real thing that happened.
I know, yeah.
It must have been this unspoken thing. It was.
It was. It was definitely unspoken, but I just... it's funny when you think about it.
But is that a pitfall then? Not a pitfall, a side of being a musician and in the music industry that's not talked about, or?
Well, you need to, I think, to be a musician, I think you need to have a partner that truly understands it. That's probably going to be another musician, which might be a whole other world of problems.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or somebody at least with like, some the creative outlook.
But some people like being supporters.
Yeah.
They like that role. Like caretakers or nurturers or whatever, different versions. Caretaking sounds dismissive as a role.
But I think what I'm talking about is just a different understanding of it to a traditional kind of existence. That's all it is, really.
Yeah.
We've been talking for an hour and 10. We should come back to this because this is... There's so many pitfalls. I mean, I've loved all that stuff about our former relationships and our erstwhile partners. It's brilliant.
How vindictive we are.
We're not vindictive.
We're not vindictive. Strategic.
I mean, obviously, there's things that we've done that probably, you know...
Speak for yourself.
There's things that... Unless I was using the royal we, actually. There's things that one may have done that might not fit with what you would call traditionally brilliant behaviour, but... It's just funny when you get moments like that to just observe it from the other side. I just love stuff like that, actually. You know what? I just love it all. Isn't it great? You happy?
Don't ask me that
Your least favourite question. Sorry, I won't ask
that. Are you okay?
Am I okay?
Yeah.
No. Of course I'm not okay. Justin Hawkins rides again. Again. Thanks, Jenny May Finn.
The Jaws of Victory.
Oh, the Jaws of Victory and all the rest of it. Nice one! I was playing it longer because I wanted to illustrate the point about...
Yeah, I got that. Okay. I went into my loop.
Thank you so much for listening to Justin Hawkins Rides Again, the podcast. If you liked this episode, feel free to leave us a review on Spotify or Apple and share it far and wide if you feel so inclined. You can also watch this over on my YouTube channel. Don't forget, next week I'll be interviewing Pat Finity, a fellow music pundit, and you'll learn a lot from listening to him. He's brilliant, as are you. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you... See you on the ice. That's it. Nice one. Again.